Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
It's Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Corey and Mason.
Welcome to another episode of Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast, the podcast made by film fans for film fans. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mason Schmidt, here with my best bud, Corey Knudsen.
Ew.
And let's talk movies, new releases, old, film news, and physical media releases. Let's get into it. Corey, how have you been, and what are we going to be drinking today?
Kind of a busy week. We both didn't watch as much stuff. Your anal probe is complete.
Yeah, I had my colonoscopy, and it went well. I was also awake for the entirety of it, but I don't thankfully remember it all, like, beat for beat. It's more of just, like, dream, like, memory and imagery.
I'm sure it was a dream for you.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it. It was the best feeling in the world. I cannot, like, I was awake the entire time, and supposedly I was talking a lot. Which I feel bad for the doctor. And I also, like, I said at one point, because I also, Allie also mentioned this to me, but I said, this is like a video game. Give me a controller. While the fucking probe video camera was just all up in me. So yeah, I don't know.
Would you want to be controlling it? Is that what you think you meant?
It felt like playing zombies almost, except we're just shooting anal polyps.
Just Space Invaders. taking them out.
I've never said a grosser thing. But yeah, my colonoscopy went great. The shitting before the buildup, like what you have to do, the prep work, sucks. Hate that. Never, like, you might as well just like lay down naked in a tub and just shit profusely and then run the water every once in a while.
It's been a strong first minute and 30 into this.
Yeah, it's been great. It was going to start a lot more aggressive with me saying, fuck Ted Sarandos, but we'll talk about
that. But yeah, so today we're switching up a little bit. We got some wine. We got Francis Ford Coppola's Director's Cut Cabernet Sauvignon 2021. It's good shit. I like it. We have a little bit more, so we'll probably crack into the rest of that. We go through wine really quick.
Yeah, one of my favorite memories, I think, was when you came over to stay at my one-bedroom apartment in St. Paul, and I think we had, like, two bottles of wine, and we just went fucking bananas.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like, we sat up talking and just dying laughing, and we polished off two bottles of wine, and I was like, that's just, it's just so fun, and it's just easy drinking, it's just adult grape juice.
Oh, yeah.
But I, this being Francis Ford Coppola's wine, and this being the main funding force for Megalopolis, I still need to watch that movie, and picking this up today, I was like, I should sit down
should
and
watch it.
Submit myself to Megalopolis.
Need your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't think anyone needs my thoughts on any movie like that, but I'd be really interested in seeing it. It looks like a fucking Android commercial, but...
Yeah. Anyways, gonna get into the new releases. The big one this week was Five Nights at Freddy's 2. I fully planned on seeing this movie, and then I was hungover this morning and didn't see it. I feel like I've said that probably five or six times.
That's fine. That's fine. Especially with this movie. That is completely fine.
Mason sent me a text yesterday and was like, this movie is unbelievably bad. So I felt a bit better about staying home and watching college football. I did rewatch the first movie this week, and I stand by kind of what I've said the past couple weeks. It's a fine little entry-level horror movie.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. Some of the reveals at the end feel weird with like the cop character played by Elizabeth Lail. But like there's, I like the, I don't know, like the lore of this place that kind of got shut down and these weird animatronics running around. So it was nice to rewatch that one. I will see the second one, in a couple days maybe, but I'm excited because knowing how bad it is, I feel like that's going to be a more enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
But I'll let you take it away because you did watch this.
I would say whenever you go to see this, go in heavy loaded. Bring in some alcohol. You're going to need it because I remember seeing the Rotten Tomato score of like, at the time, it was maybe 13%. It's been dancing around the low teens. And I was like, whew, strong showing. Let's go. Because, like you, I'm like, I don't love the first one. I don't really like it. I think it's a decent enough, like, training wheels horror film for, like, entry-level young horror fans. This one is not. This is one of the most incompetent things I've seen put in theaters. This is easily the worst film of 2025 for me. I can't imagine a worse movie coming out this year with what we have left, just this past or this upcoming month that we have ahead of us. It's also one of the worst theatrical experiences I've ever endured in theaters. I hated every second of this movie. And I had to, like, I had, like, a issue going throughout the entire movie, and I was, like, an inner monologue of me talking to you after the fact. I'm like, I need to stay. I can't leave this movie, because Corey would be so upset if I walked out of this. And also, I'm like, I need... It got to a point where I'm like, I've stayed so long that I need to stick it out so I can, like, rightfully talk shit on this. Because, like, it's, like, with I Know What You Did Last Summer, I left early. I did not stick around. I left, like, halfway through that movie. And it's hard for me to really dog on that movie because I didn't see all of it. But what I did see wasn't good enough to keep me there. Nothing in this movie was good enough to keep me there, but I was just like, you know what? I'm here. And if I leave early, I'm just going to have to go to my work party, my work holiday party, and I don't want to rush to that. So, Emma Tammy, who is the director of this film, directed the first one. Holy shit, can she not direct a movie? Not necessarily that anything, like, looks bad. It's just there's no energy in this film. Every scene is just so muddled and slow-moving, and characters say their lines, and we just slowly move on to the next story beat. Like, there's no energy, there's no urgency, there's little to any coherence, and scenes don't build to anything. They just kind of limp along. Scott Cawthon, I think, is the name of the writer of this and the previous film. He's also a writer of the games. You know what? Leave script writing to actual screenwriters, because Jesus Christ, fucking don't do this anymore. It is so hard to sit through this film just based on the level. What?
I just like the fact that the screenwriter, you're like, don't do this. Don't write anymore.
Don't, just stop. It's cute that you're trying, but this is all dead on arrival. Like, there's conveniences up the ass. Just characters show up for the convenience of the plot to help, and then they leave. Like, there are characters fully made up to have one moment later on in the movie, and then they're never heard of or seen from again. There's a lot of half-baked ideas, staggering lack of imagination. Like, it's just... you couldn't convince me that this is based on a video game, or whatever that kind of mythology that's grown out of that video game, just because this is so base-level nothing. Like, there's not a lot of inventive, creative add-ons to this. You do get, like... I will say maybe the one positive is this marionette monster that also works at this, what, Freddy Fazbear's Fuckfest village or whatever it is. This,
hell yeah.
This building that he has. this marionette, kind of some good creepy imagery there, but otherwise just fucking bland. It's Skeet Ulrich, who is... It's kind of been talked about that. Oh, him and Matthew Lillard finally back together. They're going to be in a horror movie again together. They don't share a single scene together. Matthew Lillard's in this movie for maybe 2 minutes. Skeet Ulrich, maybe less. Both glorified cameos, and they're the best parts when they're there, and then they're immediately gone and erased, which is sad to say. There are some really sad attempts at humor that I told Corey one of the humorous lines that I experienced in the latter acts of this movie, where I'm like, what was the fucking point with this joke? And also, is this even a joke? Like, what's... Why is this neighbor telling this married couple to get a lawyer for, or that they better have a good lawyer? Like, there's no interesting anything in this movie. It's so flat, it's dull, there's no humor, the characters are boring. We get another, similar to the first film, we get another reveal, kind of twist, mostly a reveal with that Vanessa character of, like, family lineage, and I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, stop trying to make things inventive or cool, or like, oh, isn't this so much better now? Like, whoa, look at what we did here. You didn't see that coming. It's like, this adds nothing to the plot, adds nothing to the enjoyment. This is such a toothless horror film. It almost doesn't even attempt to build suspense or tension. And when it does, it's just the, jump scare. Jump scare. There's no blood. There's no nothing. It's just unenjoyable bullshit. There is Wayne Knight's also in this movie.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and I forgot about that, and then he pops up, and he just plays this teacher who's, the actress is Piper Rubio, who plays the younger sister of Josh Hutcherson, which Josh Hutcherson mentally and emotionally checked out of this entire fucking movie, but Piper Rubio, her entire character subplot is that she's trying to build a robot for the science fair, and she ends up replicating a smaller version of one of these animatronics at Freddy Fazbear's fuck place. And Wayne Knight is just there to shit on this little girl's dreams. So some of his moments are kind of enjoyable because it's just like, this is the worst teacher of all time. This would not exist in real life. But it's just like, oh, is that your science fair project? Oh! Just like, oh my God. So I can't recommend enough that you stay away from this movie. I know you're going to see it. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said, go in with at least a drink down and a drink in hand, because it's probably going to make this a little bit more smooth and enjoyable. My colonoscopy was more enjoyable than this fucking movie. So good luck to you with watching it. I did not like it in the slightest. And yeah, it was one of the worst things I've seen in a long time.
I feel like we have this thing where one of us will see a bad movie and shit on it, and then the other one's kind of like, you talking about it, I'm more excited to just now. Be like, wow, this is bad.
But it's not even like so bad it's good. It's just so bad it's boring and bland. Like, this movie could have been 3 hours long, and you tell me that, I've been convinced. Like, this movie moves so slow. There's no momentum, and things just kind of happen, and then they have the audacity in the last final moments to try and bait for a sequel, and I'm like, for the love of fucking Christ, don't do this to me. Please stop. And also, it's just the most, like, limp dick cut to black ending. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And, yeah.
Did you stay to see if there was a post-credit scene?
Nope. Didn't even think about it. Is there one? Did you look?
No, I have no idea.
Now I'm going to Google, but I if there is, I can't imagine it being anything really noteworthy or mentionable. Because there's nothing in this film that is noteworthy or mentionable.
Also, I heard that Megan Fox voices one of the...
Maybe, I think one of the, like, maybe Chica, or like, there's like new iterations of the characters from the first one, okay. Those animatronics, they're kind of revamped.
Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
A little bit, because it's at a different, which they don't 100% layout super well in this film. This is a different, this is the original franchise location, where I was like, I thought the first movie had the original franchise location. It must have just been a random offshoot, but this one has different versions, more revamped versions of the, like, Fozbear and Chica and whatever the fucking fox with the eye patch and blue dumb fuck bunny
or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
So I don't know, but I think Megan Fox maybe. I think was Chica, potentially, but that's not doing anything for me. If I'm not going to see Megan Fox in this movie, you might as well just not be there.
Yeah, right. I feel like the first movie even struggled a bit with, like I said, the concept of it is kind of okay. Like, this abandoned, like, Chuck E. Cheese type place, almost, where you have these animatronics and they're creeping around. But then it was mixed with, like, a lot of flashbacks of Josh Hutcherson. Like, rewatching the first movie, I was like, wow, I forgot how much time we spent in his own flashbacks of his brother going missing, and then, like, it's connected to the stuff that's going on now, and then the cop is also here. Like, that shit kind of gets murky when it's, like, people just walking through and, like, these animatronics are killing them. Like, it's kind of fun, I guess, but, I don't know. I am looking forward to seeing it because of how bad it will be.
There is a post-credit scene, so maybe stick around for it. It sounds uneventful.
Is it a mid-credits or a post-credits?
I think it's post-credit. Oh, so you might. It is a post-credit. Fuck. I think. So you'll have to sit through a lot of the increasing trash.
God damn it. I don't know if I'll do that. Maybe I'll look it up online afterwards.
Sometimes I do that. Right here, and it just
Find it on TikTok or something later. Anything else about Five Nights at Freddy's?
I mean, they try and, which, it's not my favorite part of the first movie, which I don't really have a favorite part of the first film, but, like, the dream thing that they do with Josh Hutcherson in that film of, like, how he explores, like, his guilt of his brother getting kidnapped or dying or whatever the fuck. And they try to bring that back in this movie, but with the Vanessa character, and I was like, I don't need this kind of aspect to this world anymore. Like, just leave it. I think if you do a more simple story of, like, locked in a building with these animatronics and having to survive, like the games, you'll probably be fine. Watch Willy's Wonderland with Nick Cage. It is a better attempt at what both of these movies is setting out to try and do. It's very much like, oh, Nick Cage is a security guard overnight and these animatronics come to life. It's very much a knockoff of Five Nights at Freddy's, but it's better than these movies. So check that out instead, because this is a waste of time.
Did you ever play the games, the Five Nights at Freddy's game?
I did, and I didn't get... it was the original, the one you play on your phone. I don't know if there's a different version of it or a different console or however you play it, but... It did nothing for me. It's kind of like rinse and repeat. Flashlight. Open that door. Shut the door. It wasn't enough for me. If I played it when I was younger, it probably would have been playing that Slender Man game.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I don't know, maybe it would have been something if I was younger. I would have liked it more or gotten scared more by it. But it's just big animatronic dumb fucking bear yelling at me. Oh, God. Oh, so scary.
I'm dead.
I'm dead. Yeah. Okay. Right. Can't recommend you staying away from this movie more than enough. Run away. This movie's probably gonna make bank because it's a Blumhouse horror film, and they'll probably make a third one, so I will definitely go see that movie and likely hate that one as well, especially if you have the same creative team behind it, because this is fucking gray slop. So can't recommend this movie enough.
Yeah. Right on. A much better movie, just from the sounds of it, that I saw this week. The only movie I saw in theaters this week was Hamnet, which you talked about last week. You really enjoyed. It is kind of one of the front runners for Best Picture at the Oscars, at least kind of in a lot of the big categories. It's kind of getting mentioned there for sure. Again, it comes from Chloe Zhao, gave us The Rider, Nomadland. She won Best Director for, and Eternals, which we both really like, think is very underrated. And we still haven't seen those characters come back at all in the MCU. Will we ever again? I don't know. We'll see.
I feel like if you don't in Avengers Doomsday or whatever the...
Secret Wars,
we're just not addressing these at all.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'd love to see him come back, because I thought she did a good job on that movie. But this stars Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal, and it is based on a book from Maggie O'Farrell called Hamnet, and I didn't realize the book came out in 2020. I thought it was a much older book.
I didn't know that either. Yeah.
But it's essentially a kind of Shakespearean adjacent movie, I would say. Kind of a story of love and loss that inspired the creation of Shakespeare's masterpiece Hamlet, which they put early on in the movie. I think it's the opening text where they say Hamlet and Hamnet in 16th and 17th century were interchangeable names. So kind of a fictionalized story. The book is a fictionalized story of Shakespeare creating Hamnet, but also kind of maybe true also with his wife named Anne Hathaway. It's crazy that, we had that. That always shocks me that I'm just like, wow, we have Anne Hathaway and Anne Hathaway. All right.
Same person.
It's great.
No one knows that. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a vampire just floating around. But I I love Anne Hathaway.
She's floating around.
A little Catwoman floating around. As we're eating some Nerds gummy clusters, by the way, talking about Hamnet, what's a better combo?
Drinking red wine.
Yeah, we can... What other movie reviewers are going to be eating Nerds clusters, drinking wine, and talking about Oscar movies, huh? Yeah, us.
That's why we have 28 subscribers.
That's why we have 28, yes. Thank you for all 28 that watch. We appreciate it. Anyways, Hamnet. This movie's really good. I liked it. I think I've never been a huge Shakespeare fan, or kind of like I said, Shakespeare adjacent fan, where I know you were a theater kid and you had some...
Let's not say it.
Were you in theater? Were you in plays in high school?
I was, but I wouldn't say I was a theater kid.
I watched you in a play dress up as a woman.
Yeah, and that was the best thing you ever saw.
Absolutely. James and the Giant Peach, somebody was sick, and you filled in for the old woman in James and the Giant Peach.
You were bricked up the entire time.
I absolutely was. That was tough to hide. but I feel I appreciate Shakespeare, obviously, and I like it, but I've never been even the tragedy of Macbeth, that came out a few years ago. I like that movie. I think it looks really cool, but I've just never fully kind of connected to the pure material from that. But this is a really good one. I mean, it really does check all the boxes. It looks beautiful. There's a lot of nature scenes in this movie in the woods that look really great. And the writing is really crisp. It's I know Maggie O'Farrell worked on the screenplay as well. And Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal give great performances here. The supporting roles, you have Emily Watson, Joe Alwyn, and then you have the Jupe brothers, Noah Jupe, who's been in Ford v. Ferrari, Honey Boy, he's really good in. But then his younger brother, Jacoby Jupe, I don't know how to pronounce it, but He is great in this movie. Like, honestly, as Hamnet. And he has just, like, he's in the movie early on, and then he has a few scenes later, and it's just really impactful, and he delivers those scenes really well. So all across the board, this is kind of for the best ensemble or best cast Oscar. This feels like it may get nominated for that. And I think that there are just so many moments through this movie that are very impactful. There's a moment of loss, I'll say. I don't want to, like, spoil anything if you don't know it, but, like, Jesse Buckley is just reacting to this thing that's happened, and it's not even really dialogue-centric. It's just her experiencing this and being a mother and going through that, and she's great there. And then the last, like, 15 to 20 minutes of this movie are probably my favorite portion of it, where you see the Hamlet play, and Jesse Buckley is experiencing this play that's tied very closely to her family and everything that she's gone through. And there's just a scene of people reaching out their hands, and just everybody is doing it. That is really, really powerful stuff, and kind of had me feeling it. I do kind of feel like that last 15, 20 minutes is, with that being the strongest part, the rest of the movie, like earlier on, I think is still good. I think it all hits those notes really well. It just wasn't something where I was like, the best way I'll describe it is like, I feel the same about this as I do Sentimental Value. Where I think everything in this movie works, like there's no missteps at all. I didn't watch it and say this is a mistake that they made. I didn't like think that was the right move. I think both movies do everything that they need to do really well, but it just didn't connect with me as much as I wanted it to for both movies, I'll say. But again, like I think I've seen so many reactions of people just sobbing coming out of the theater to this movie and like it really working for them. So I think this movie does exactly what it needs to do. It's just whether it kind of works for you or not. And for me, I think it's really good. If this were to win Best Picture, I'd be fine with that. Like, I think it's very deserving. I think it's incredibly well made. Jesse Buckley, I think, like you mentioned last week, is absolutely a front runner for Best Actress. So it worked for me, but just not maybe to the level as much as for some other people.
Yeah, I really loved this movie. I'm happy that you saw it. I'm not, like, completely surprised by your 100%, like, view of it. I think the Sentimental Value is a good comparison. Whereas, like, that movie, I didn't connect with it. And, like you said, no missteps. It was good. Mm-hmm. I just didn't connect with it. This one, though, I did connect with it more. And it did, like, kind of, it does it in, like, a very nuanced way. Where it tugs at your heartstrings, and it's not just so over the top, beat you over the stick with it, that I really respected. That and the performances are just sensational, which you can say that about Sentimental Value too, but Jesse Buckley is amazing in this movie. And Paul Mescal, he very much is like, he's not necessarily even a co-lead. Like, this is Jesse Buckley's film, and Paul Mescal is just, he shows up, especially towards that latter half, and I think that what this movie does really well is showing how people kind of accept grief and how they grieve and their processes around that, and where Jesse Buckley has to grieve and also be a mother and care to her other children and try and figure out a way past that. Paul Mescal, as Shakespeare, he throws himself into his work and he tries to write out his frustrations and his sorrows, and it turns into Hamlet. I'm more of a Shakespeare fan too. Macbeth is one of my favorite things I've ever read, and this just kind of worked on every single level for me, fired on all cylinders, and I really did enjoy this movie. I'm happy that you saw it, and like you, I think that this is probably one of the front runners for Best Picture. It's definitely going to be in that conversation come Oscar season, so I'm excited to talk about it down the road. And if it was to win Best Picture, I'd be pretty stoked about that. Like, there's a number of movies that if it won that one Best Picture this year, I'd be like, okay, cool. Honestly, I want Sinners to win. I don't think it will, but like, it'd be pretty fucking sweet if it did. A movie that you talked about last week, which you caught in theaters, sadly, had to watch this on Netflix, was Jay Kelly, which is directed by Noah Baumbach, who has a pretty good track record for both you and I. Squid and the Whale is great. While We're Young, I believe we watched that together for the first time, and I really loved that movie.
Yeah.
And then Marriage Story is sensational. That, I think, might be his best film that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. White Noise didn't work for me. It felt a bit pretentious. This is the telling of, like, an aging famous movie actor named Jay Kelly. played by Clooney, where he's kind of embarking on this journey, looking back through his life, his career, and it's kind of like a come to Jesus movie where he's really experiencing a lot of his regrets and trying to look back at his life and see kind of where he, not necessarily went wrong, but he made decisions that separated himself more from his loved ones, as Corey talks
about. As I refill the wine here, sorry.
This film has Clooney, Sandler, Laura Dern. I love the cast. I love the chemistry. I think it is a really good-looking movie. The thing that really stood out to me right away, I love how back and forth you're being with us.
I'm trying to
give us like an even four. That's really sweet. That's fine. I'll take that.
Perfect.
I love the color grading in this film. Everything is super warm lit. It's like everything was shot like on the precipice of sunset. Like, everything is lit with like light orange, pink, red tones, and everything's really vibrant. And then there's also really dense blues that give the film like really a lot of depth to it. So I really love the color grading, which isn't something I typically like zone in on or like really pay attention to. And I just noticed it in this movie. I was like, damn, this is a very pretty movie. Mm-hmm. The performances are all very strong. The chemistry between kind of the three main leads, I'd say, between Laura Dern, Adam Sandler, and George Clooney are all great. And I like, honestly, the most of this movie is between Laura Dern and Adam Sandler. Their chemistry of, like, we work for him. He doesn't see us as friends unless he needs to see us as friends. We very much are his chaperones, his parents. We guide him. And then when he doesn't need us, we go away. So I like their back and forth, and I thought that there was some really cool romantic moments between the two. Laura Dern leaves pretty, not early, maybe midway through the movie, mm-hmm. and then she's never returns, and I kind of wish she would have stuck around a little bit more, just because I really did dig her chemistry with Sandler and with Clooney, but mostly with Sandler. The opening sequence of this film, it takes place, it's a sweeping shot around a film set as we're getting ready for another final take of this scene for one of Jay Kelly's films, and he's leaning up against the light post. And I just like kind of what you mentioned last week about like the movies about filmmaking are so fun to watch. And at least for people that studied film or went to film school or majored in film, whatever, it's just like it's so fun to see a peel back behind the curtain thing. And just like them testing the water functions of their rain machine, or you have Adam Sandler just kind of walking around talking on the phone of like, no, we can't do that. No, we gotta do this. And Clooney being like, no, the dog can't come in at that moment. Like, can I get more of the anchovy fucking dip on my hand so the dog can come to me? And it's just, there's little idiosyncrasies within that scene. I was like, wow, okay, I'm in on this. We don't get a whole lot of, I feel like, the peel back of like the actual filmmaking. I feel like there's more of the managerial type stuff of what comes with fame of like, oh, well, you got this appointment, you got to go here. You're not going to be around your family. You're going to have to run and we're going to fly here and go do this. Like, sorry. So I think it captures that pretty well. And I didn't get as much as at least what I wanted of peeling back behind like actual filmmaking. The biggest issue I did have with this movie is I struggled to feel empathy or sympathy for Jay Kelly. I didn't really connect with him. Like I said, it's kind of this emotional journey where he's reflecting on his past, going back through his life, trying to think about things, and he's like, damn, I really should have made it more of an effort as a dad in this moment, or I should have tried to connect with my daughters here. And it kind of fell flat to me in those aspects where I just, like, I couldn't buy into it. Like, he didn't win me over enough to make me feel sympathetic to his kind of regret that he's experiencing. I'm like, yeah, you made the bed that you lapped the lion. Now I'm sorry. That's just how it is. There was one really great scene with Patrick Wilson, which I did not know he was in the movie until he pops up. Adam Sandler also is one of his managers. He manages George Clooney or Jay Kelly. And I think his name is maybe Michael. I don't remember, but Patrick Wilson playing that role, where we get this moment between George Clooney, Patrick Wilson, as they're both en route to this kind of tribute to both of their careers. And Patrick Wilson gets out of this kind of convoy of cars, and every car is filled with family members or friends. And he's like, oh, this is my wife. This is my son. This is my uncle. This is all these people that are important to me. And George Clooney is just like, sorry, I have no one to introduce you to. I don't have anyone, basically. And I'm like, okay, that kind of worked for me in this moment. But it doesn't, like, overall scene to scene really work. I really enjoyed a lot of the commentary on fame and stuff like that. However, when we get to that tribute of George Clooney towards the end of this film, it kind of felt like we broke the fourth wall a little bit. It got a little too meta for me. There's a bit of a montage for J. Kelly's career, but it's all shown through George Clooney's film career. So we're getting shots of like Out of Sight and stuff like that, or Three Kings. And I'm like, what are we doing? It felt like Babylon, like the ending of Babylon, when we got a montage of just like what cinema can become. And we get so many shots of Avatar, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on right now? It felt a little bit too self-serving in that moment. And then the very last shot, spoiler alert, is a fourth wall break where he looks dead to rights right into the camera. And I was just like, you lost me. So it didn't 100% work for me. It wasn't a bad movie. Like, there are aspects of it I really did like. It didn't wow me in the way that I was hoping it would, because based off of what I've heard, what you'd mentioned about it, I was like, oh, this feels like a movie right up my alley. And it was good. It was a good enough time. It's not my favorite Noah Baumbach, but I'm happy I watched it, and I'm hoping that whether it's Dern, Sandler, or Clooney, someone's in awards conversation for their performances in this movie.
Yeah. No, I hope Sandler does get in for sure. I know Laura Dern's also in Is This Thing On, which is coming out in a couple weeks, so I know I think she's maybe getting more for that. But yeah, I kind of touched on it last week, obviously, but I think this movie, like, surprised me just because I went in being like, all right, it's the George Clooney aging actor. Mm-hmm. We're doing this, like, you know, celebration of his life, whatever. I actually kind of liked the final scene of the movie. And I think maybe I talked about it last week, too, but the kind of bookend of the scene you mentioned where he's, like, the final scene sitting in the rain, the fucking Coca-Cola sign in the background, whatever, and, like, wanting another take in that moment. And then at the end of the movie, he wants another take, but it's in a very different context of wanting another one of his life, kind of. So it kind of worked for me. I liked seeing the evolution of this character, and for me, it was kind of this is probably how most Hollywood actors are, of like kind of putting everything else aside to achieve that fame, and like they're kind of dicks, and like you probably can't really relate to them because it's like, yeah, if you had the George Clooney looks, it's like, why wouldn't you try and do that? Yeah. So, it worked for me. There's like just some scenes I really have thought about a lot from this movie. One is when he's on a train going to Europe or like in Paris or something. Yeah, exactly. And he's just like asking people on the train, just random people, like what they do. He's like, what do you do? Like, where are you from? Like, what do you do? What are you doing on this train right now? Like, little moments like that I really enjoyed. But I'm glad you watch it for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's one that was on a base level of like, this is going to be a high up, you know, Oscar contender. I think it's dipped a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of fallen out of the conversation a small amount.
Yeah, and I think it still will be in, like, I think it could get nominated for Best Picture. I think it's still absolutely in that running for sure. But I don't know that it's going to be in a lot of other major categories. But like you mentioned, it looks really good. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it probably worked a little bit better just on some of the characters and stuff. But Netflix has had a lot of stuff this year. A lot of movies, and I feel like they are spreading it a little bit thin, where they haven't really committed to one. Like maybe Train Dreams, I guess.
I hope
it's gaining some momentum, which is great. Yeah. And we'll talk about some awards stuff in a little bit here. But they normally have like last year was kind of the Emilia Perez year, which whether you like the movie or not, you know, I don't care for that movie, but like that was the movie they were pushing, and like that's the movie that won awards. It won 3 Oscars, or 2 Oscars, or whatever the fuck it was. Too many Oscars. I like J. Kelly. I think it's good. I've kind of actually been thinking about that one a lot. I enjoy that one.
Yeah, it's a good enough for a one-time watch. I just can't see myself really sitting down and rewatch it a whole lot. But the performances are good, and like there's a lot of good in the movie, even if I don't love it overall. Yeah. The movie that this week I only watched 4 films. Kind of a slow week, which was a bit refreshing after kind of a couple of months of really just trying to see everything I possibly could. I watched The Roses this week, which came out earlier this year, directed by Jay Roach, who has a very interesting back catalog of films that he directed. The notable ones are at least the two more recent notable ones are Bombshell and Trumbo. But he also directed Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery. Like, this man has range in terms of what he's directing. Also, Meet the Fockers, which I love that movie. That was a very big, like, family movie night movie for my family growing up, so we watched that a lot. I didn't even know that Meet the Parents was a movie. I just grew up on Meet the Fockers. I was like, wow, this is crazy. All right, love this. But The Roses is Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch. It is this couple, which also I believe that this is a remake of the 1989 or 87 War of the Roses with Michael Douglas, who is it? Kathleen Turner and Danny DeVito, I believe. I haven't seen that original movie, and I don't know how much this takes from it or how much of it is a true-to-true remake. But this is about this competition of resentments baked into this marriage between these two very spirited, strong-headed personalities, both who want to succeed in their professional lives, that when one has to kind of give over the reins and accept, like, okay, I could be the stay-at-home parent while you pursue your dreams, I'm not going to get salty, but I'm definitely fucking pissed that I have to sit here and make sure that the kids have lunch right now while you get to go do all the things that you professionally have always wanted to achieve. There's a lot of good humor in this movie. It's not necessarily, because the trailers kind of market this as a pretty laugh out loud, or at least like a consistent comedy. It's not the funniest movie, but it is refreshingly darkly funny, which I really appreciated. If I had to say a negative, I'd say Kate McKinnon. Not because I don't like Kate McKinnon. It's because it's Kate McKinnon doing Kate McKinnon again. And I'm like, I get it. It works for some people. Sometimes it works for me. In this movie, I'm like, stop giving this character screen time because I'm just tired of the shtick. Andy Samberg's also in this movie. But this is really Olivia Colman, Benedict Cumberbatch going tit for tat back and forth, trying to one-up each other. And it's their relationship where, like, it makes so much sense that these two people would fall for each other, but also makes so much sense that how volatile their personalities are and their drive for being successful would drive a stake in that and divide them to the point of almost trying to kill each other, which was really, like, this is a very fun movie. Like, this would have been a great date night movie to go to with my wife. We ended up watching it at home, but, like, to see this in theaters, I'm like, oh, this would have been a perfect, like, dinner in a movie kind of situation. It's not always the funniest movie, but it takes some pretty ballsy swings, especially with the ending. The ending is pretty fucking dark and pretty bold, and it came not necessarily out of left field, but it was just such a shock to me. And then it cuts to black, and I was like, no way that they just did that. So, and it got a lot of respect for me with what they're willing to do in those last couple of minutes. This is Olivia Colman's kind of movie. Like, yes, it is between her and Benedict Cumberbatch, but Olivia Colman is so charismatic and so funny. Anything she's in, she's likely going to steal the show, and she definitely does here. And she gets a lot of the funnier moments. And this is just a refreshing movie because we don't get a lot of like these mid-range comedies in theaters. So I would definitely recommend it to anyone that hasn't seen it yet. It's a good, enjoyable time. It's not the best movie of the year, but it's just such a good, easy watch that's pretty funny and has some pretty big swings that I really appreciate. And I really want you to watch it soon because I want to get your take on the ending because it's maybe one of my favorite endings of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really good.
Where'd you watch it on?
I think it was on Hulu.
Okay.
I think Hulu.
Yeah.
Which I don't love because we have every fucking subscription, which I'm not going to pay for premium on all of them. So, like, I watch it with ads. So. Yeah. I hate watching movies with ads so fucking much.
Cause it sucks.
It takes you out of it, and especially when you're in a comedy, to get back into like this light mood or light tone. I'm like, fuck, I just watched an insurance ad right now. I just watched Progressive. Yeah. Yeah.
So, no, Olivia Colman's great. Such an interesting like rise for her. Like,
oh, yeah.
I feel like The Favorite was kind of where everyone was like, obviously she won an Oscar for that movie. But just like in her later career, just like kind of exploding onto the scene and being in all these things. She's great in The Bear. You know, she was in Secret Invasion. Like, she's just like been in a lot of stuff too, which is really cool to see.
Was in a movie in, which I didn't see, but I really wanted to see because I heard it was a pretty good, like, charming comedy with Jesse Buckley called Wicked Little Letters that came out in like 2023.
I heard that was good.
I heard great things. So I'm like, I love Olivia Colman. Ever since I loved her in The Favorite, but I've never loved a actor more than during her Oscar acceptance speech.
Incredible.
Just the, like, I remember watching that Oscars at my childhood home, and I was in the main level of our home watching it, And she, Olivia Colman's giving her acceptance speech, and she like does like the at the camera about like the time running down. And I heard upstairs in my mom's bedroom her just gut bust laugh to it. And it was just like, I love this woman. She's so charming and authentic and very funny. So she's, yeah, she steals every scene she's in this movie, as she does in just about any movie she's in. But I was kind of on a Benedict Cumberbatch tear this week, which I didn't necessarily set out to do. Sunday night, I was scrolling through just kind of like showtimes for movies near us, and I found that there was a movie called The Thing with Feathers coming out, which immediately sparked in my mind, like, oh, is this an adaptation of the book Grief is the Thing with Feathers? Because I fucking love that book. It's one of my favorites. This is a film adaptation of that book, which immediately kind of scared me, just because that book is really kind of experimental with the writing, at least the, like the style and the form. Like, some of it's kind of almost poetry, some of it's prose. It fluctuates and does so many different things. And yes, there is a crow in the book that kind of is the physical manifestation of this family's grief. This film is directed by Dylan Southern, which I believe that this is his feature-length directorial debut, I believe. This film is starring Benedict Cumberbatch, like I mentioned, but it also has Sam Spruill, David Thewlis, and Henry and Richard Boxall, who play the two sons in the film. This is about this family, Benedict Cumberbatch being the patriarch of it, but he's forced into having to be the nurturing father figure to his two sons after their mom dies. And it's them all trying to kind of come to grips with the situation, while this crow, or this manifestation of grief, lingers in the background and haunts them and kind of mocks them at times. Going into this movie, like, I think the material of this book is so good that I was expecting, or kind of like, what I would want to get out of this movie is basically something similar to Denis Villeneuve's Enemy. Like, it's that kind of dark, very serious, no hint of humor, introspective look at something that's just haunting a person. So when I read the book, I was like, this makes me think of Enemy. This film, it's pretty good. It's like a pretty decent adaptation of it. It handles a lot of like the basic story beats of the book pretty well. The only real issue I have, which is the thing that I was most concerned about going into the movie, is how they represent the crow. Because you can get away with a lot in a book with the written word and kind of the ambiguity of things, and is this crow actually a physical form? Is this crow literally like yelling at this man? And is he the size of a man? Like, there's things that you can get away with in a book. In the film, it's almost like a one-to-one, like, we're just gonna make this crow basically a man in a suit. And at times, kind of the more abstract things became too straightforward and theatrical, that it kind of wore the movie a little thin, and it felt a little cheap at times. I also think Dylan Southern, I think, worked on the writing the script and adapting the book to this movie, which I'm happy that this man is so invested in this book. I love this book too, but I feel like someone more accomplished or a little bit more of a confident writer could have adapted this a little bit better. That being said, Benedict Cumberbatch is amazing. I feel like I've gotten so used to seeing him in like genre films, or like I just associate him with Doctor Strange now at this point,
or crawling around a smog,
or a smog. behind the scenes videos of
so
that
funny.
Is awesome. But I forget that how great he is as a of just a dramatic actor. Like, this Imitation Game, like, he is sensational, and he's great in this movie. And he's never laying it on too thick, where this is a very, at times, melodramatic and very serious, like I said, no humor really, as he deals with this manifestation of grief kind of like chipping away at him. But it is, I think, still impactful, even though it kind of loses its way at times with the translation of the book. I think it's impactful with just the story of this man trying to become the nurturer for his two sons in the absence of their mother. And I think it works overall. It's a bit too long, and it's a bit muddled, so like, it's not flawless, but I did really enjoy watching this movie. I don't know. I'd be interested to see someone watch this movie who hadn't read the book, and if they liked it more, or if they liked it at all. Because it's kind of, at times, the way the crow is shown in this movie, it's kind of funny. And which I feel like is a mistake. But maybe for someone who's coming into this with fresh eyes and no expectation, maybe it'd work for them better than it did for me. So overall, it was kind of a nice little surprise getting to see a adaptation of a book that I love in theaters this past week. So I really liked it. I was sadly the only person in the theater. So I can't imagine that this movie is going to make a whole lot of money, but it was a good enough time and I was happy to see it in theaters.
Yeah, I've not read the book, so I'd be interested to watch this movie for sure. I just really don't know much about it besides kind of what you talked about here. We are in December now, and if you've been watching the channel for a while, thank you if you have been. I have been doing a thing that I started in January, my alphabet watch through of watching classic movies, starting with A in January, any weeks that I kind of have some free time to watch a movie going through the alphabet. And just a classic, or just like a movie that I own that I haven't seen. This week was Red, which this just a brief little story on this Red, this 4K steelbook that I really love. We had a great day. I don't know if you remember it, but we went and saw The Bike Riders, and then we went and bought some movies at like a Half Price Books and a Walmart. I bought this at the Walmart there, and then we got Five Guys, and then we went back and we watched some college baseball and hockey. It was like the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. And like, that's one of my favorite days when we lived together. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Just like, it hit everything we wanted to do. And we didn't even like plan it in a day. It was just like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. It's fine. But like, I bought this steelbook there. And like, Lionsgate steelbooks are great. It's really fun. Also, this one is really cool as a little nerdy physical media thing. It has a first pressing thing. It's probably not going to show up in here. But it has a first pressing thing in this steelbook that is like, you know, the first time they printed these things. So it's a cool little thing. And I'd never seen these movies before. And I'd always heard about them. And, you know, it's Bruce Willis and some fucking old action movies or whatever.
No shit, this is your first time watching these?
I'd never seen them before.
Oh my god, yeah. I didn't even think about that. I thought you'd seen these.
No, I had never seen the Red movies. And also, I didn't know that Red stood for something.
Oh yeah, Retired Extremely Dangerous.
Yeah, didn't know that. That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, you know? You talk about it because you just saw it for the first time. But I forgot, I didn't even know that you had
seen these. I've had this for years since the fucking Bike Rider came out, whenever that was. Great movie. Yeah, really good. But yeah, so Red, the first one, came out in 2010. It was directed by Robert Schwenke, which, you know, he's given us movies like RIPD and the last couple Divergent movies before they got canceled because they were really bad.
Not great.
And then Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origin Story, which I saw in theaters, I remember, and I was like, whoa, okay, that's something.
Red might be his best film.
Probably. I know he did some earlier stuff too. I haven't seen all of it, but yeah, he did like The Time Traveler's Wife, and then I think Flight Plan with Jodie Foster as well.
Oh, that's a decent thriller.
So like he had some earlier stuff too. But basically, it's kind of funny because like the first movie came out the same year as The Expendables in 2010.
Hell yeah, it did.
And it was this era of like the old action stars like getting back into the action game and going on a little mission. The first movie, you have Bruce Willis in the lead role, and you know his life is kind of upended. He's a retired CIA agent, and then he kind of gets pulled back in with some of his old team members. And the vice president, played by Julian McMahon, which he passed away earlier this year. We talked about, you know, in the Fantastic Four kind of movies. He's trying to cover up some war crimes that he did back in the day. And Bruce Willis teams up with Helen Mirren and John Malkovich and Morgan Freeman. Mary Louise Parker is in there, which in both movies, I don't like Mary Louise Parker in either of these movies. She's really annoying to me. She's just like, it's just kind of a poorly written thing of like the girl that's along for the ride and is just kind of like, I don't know how to use a gun. And I'm like, all right, you're just kind of annoying in this role. It's not well written at all. It's not like her fault or anything, but it's just like, yeah, it's whatever. Brian Cox also shows up in both of these movies and he's kind of fun as like this Russian dude. And I actually kind of enjoy the first movie. It's a fun little like old retired CIA people coming together trying to thwart a plan. The only thing I remember from the marketing in this movie was in the trailers they showed a shot of Bruce Willis stepping out of a car as it was doing a circle, and he just steps out and starts shooting somebody without, like, tripping or anything.
And the thing spins and just clears him.
Yeah, and then he gets back in the car. And you know what? Fuck it. That's cool.
So awesome.
That's really fun. I like that. So I had a good enough time with the first movie. I think it's kind of fun. Like, it does kind of hit that Expendables thing of, like, Helen Mirren firing a machine gun. And you're like, sure, fuck it. Spoiler alert for the first Red movie. Morgan Freeman dies in a really weird way where he dies and I'm like, oh, he's going to come back. And then the movie ended and I'm like, okay, he'll probably come back in the second movie and they'll do a thing. Doesn't come back. And I'm like, oh, you didn't explain. Cause it's a whole thing where they're in this house with also Richard Dreyfuss is in the first movie, which he doesn't pop up in a lot of stuff in the last fucking 20 years. But they like go out of his house and there's like people surrounding it. And Morgan Freeman goes out, and then he just kind of falls over, and they're like, oh, shit, he shot him, who shot him? But then everyone's like, we didn't shoot him, who shot him? And then they never explain who actually shot him, and I'm like, well did he, what?
Is he dead?
Who did it? Who did he do it himself? Yeah. I don't know, I was confused. Anyways, maybe I'm just dumb, but both of these movies get really overly complicated for what they are. It's like a simple enough story, but then they add 18 different things going on, and it kind of bleeds into the second one too. Mm-hmm. You add so many other people. You add fucking Storm Shadow from G.I. Joe.
Why not?
Lee Byung-hun in the movie. Neil McDonough's in there. David Thewlis. Catherine Zeta-Jones. She's looking pretty good in that second movie. Who else? Oh, Anthony Hopkins. He's in the second movie as well. The second one came out in 2013. I like this one a little bit less than the first one. It just felt more kind of messy. It felt like we had so many characters everywhere. And I was like, you didn't show up for the last 30 minutes and now you're kind of back. And I don't really understand what's going on. And essentially they're trying to... The team's trying to bring down this like nuclear device that was built in Russia back in the day. Nightshade, it's called. And Anthony Hopkins kind of designed it, so they're trying to find him, whatever. It's still fine. Like, it's very watchable. First time I think I've sneezed ever on this podcast. Maybe?
It's usually me randomly coughing when I'm talking.
Yeah, fact check me for the people that have been here since day one, through the other 80 episodes or whatever.
Are
we
gonna
have.
Sneeze again?
No, I think I think I'm good now. It was just a water. We're good.
Just a water.
Just a water. Anyways, Red 2, it's not great, but it's still kind of, like, enjoyable enough. John Malkovich is fun in both of these movies. He's kind of a conspiracy theorist that, like, has guns inside of, like, a stuffed little bear or some bullshit, like a pink teddy bear. These movies are fine. They're okay. Also, I guess I had probably forgotten that these were based on DC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't realize that, so I guess this alphabet watch through, again, if you've been watching for a while, I watched Jonah Hex back in the day, earlier this year. So just hit some DC Comics movies, didn't plan on that. This was just one that I have owned forever and hadn't watched, so I decided to check them out. They're fine. They're decent little action movies. I like... You know, I like the Expendables movies more in terms of, like, older people returning to, like, their team and beating the shit out of people. But they're fine.
The first Red is so nostalgic for me. I can, like, directly link 2010 being, like, the year I fell in love with movies. But it wasn't, like, necessarily good movies. It was the shitty type action movies like Expendables, Red, and the A-Team. Remake.
Hell yeah.
Because I remember definitively when I started collecting movies, I'd buy DVDs at the time, and I had a dresser in my room, and the bottom drawer was just all my movies. I could only fit 32 movies in there, so I had a top 32. My top three favorite movies of all time as a 10-year-old boy, in this order, was The Expendables as number one, The A-Team at number two, and Red at number three.
Fuck yeah.
I thought those were the coolest fucking movies, and then Rambo 4 at number four.
Oh, nice.
Right? I was fucking well-versed in action movies. So, I love Red. I love, like, the stupid shit of just putting bullets on the stove and letting them pop off.
Oh, yeah.
When he's trying to, like, put a decoy out so he can kind of hide and get away from the people in his house that are intruding. And I really enjoy the movie. That, and like, I can't believe you haven't seen this, the first one at least, because it was on FX all the fucking time growing up. And there's like that shot of the guy throwing a grenade at John Malkovich, and then he just
baseball bats it.
It's so perfect. Yeah. Also, Carl Urban in Red 2010, that was like the thing I knew him from. Like, that's when I like really took note of Carl Urban, and I was like, oh, I like this guy. And then I started watching the Star Trek movies, and I was, knew him as Bones, and then Dredd. And
yeah,
I've been able to kind of grow in like, what is it, Scourge? In
Thor Ragnarok. Yeah. It's like, I feel like I first saw him in like Lord of the Rings, but kind of a small role, but then, sure.
Red was like the wake up call of like, I know this guy. Mm-hmm. I like this guy. So I've always liked both of these movies. The first one is better. I thought the second one was really, like you said, convoluted, but still pretty funny.
Yeah,
and just like good enough time.
Yeah.
So I'm happy you got to see this, because these are a good fun watch.
Yeah, and honestly, like, this Steelbook 4K release is like better than both of the movies themselves.
Yeah, the actual packaging.
But like, I really like it. And Lionsgate puts out great stuff. Check out their website. They have a lot more stuff than they sell in stores, and they do a lot of really good things. So, anyways. Moving into new releases for the week. Again, kind of a quiet week. You mentioned it, which I'm fine with. I need to catch up on, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's 2, I guess. So
no,
I'll fucking I'll do that.
You do. Me too.
One movie that I feel like I've seen the trailers for a lot is Ella McKay, which is directed by James L. Brooks, and it stars Emma Mackey and Jamie Lee Curtis. Woody Harrelson's also in the movie. And it's about a young woman who's juggling her family and her work life, and it's kind of a comedy about the people you love and how to survive them. It seems like a fine little holiday movie. Like, I haven't really heard many people talking about this movie, but...
It feels like a movie I'd take my mom to.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's kind of the draw here for the holiday season. Go see it with family. Another one that's kind of interesting is called Goodbye June, which is directed by Kate Winslet, and she's starring in the movie as well. Helen Mirren, speaking of her, Toni Collette, Stephen Merchant. And it follows a group of siblings who are coming together under sudden and trying circumstances. I don't know much else about this movie. I don't think I've seen a trailer for it, but it is going to be in limited release this weekend. Always kind of interesting when a like very known actor like Kate Winslet is directing a movie. So definitely curious to check that one out. And then we do have another movie coming out, Silent Night, Deadly Night, which I'll let you talk about because I have not seen any, like, I haven't seen the original Silent Night, Deadly Night from 84 or the 2012 one. I don't really know much about the franchise, but I'm kind of curious. I might actually check out the new one.
This one is directed by Mike P. Nelson, who did a segment of VHS 1985 or VHS 85. I think that's one of his more recent things that he put out there, but also this film is starring Rowan Campbell, which we all know from the horror classic Halloween Ends, where he played the great Corey Cunningham. I love that movie unabashedly, even though I will admit that is not the best movie ever made. But he is starring that main role. This is about a child who witnesses his parents being murdered by a man in a Santa suit, and years later, as an adult, he dons a Santa costume himself and embarks on a violent quest for retribution against those responsible for the traumatic events from his childhood. This is such a schlocky B-rate horror movie that I'm like, I didn't know that they were making until I think I was seeing, I saw the trailer for this maybe back in October, and I was like, okay, I guess we can do this, which I love holiday horror movies, whether it's like Thanksgiving, or like, obviously you have all the Halloween films with Halloween. I love Krampus. I love Black Christmas. I love horror movies set around Christmas. The original Silent Night, Deadly Night is pretty cheesy, especially the sequel to it. Very cheesy and very campy. Both the movies aren't, like, great, but, like, for what you're getting out of them, it's good holiday horror enjoyment. And they're usually pretty gory, pretty aggressive, but they're very, like, hitting home that grindhouse B-horror film. This is the second remake. I don't know if it's, like, for sure going to be a remake or if they're taking the basic story and doing a full reimagining. Like I said, I've really only seen the trailer, so I don't know a whole lot about this aside from it. But of this kind of slower release week, if this movie is showing near us, I will probably end up going to see it because I'm already in that conversation with my wife every night of like, we should watch a Christmas movie. What do we need to watch this season? And it's usually like Home Alone or Krampus or... what did we watch last year? I don't remember.
Krampus is great.
I love that movie. Yeah. I think that's really good. But it's kind of come down to those, so... I'll likely be checking that out this upcoming week, and I'm kind of going to keep my ear open for Goodbye June, just because I'm interested to see what Kate Winslet does, and I like the cast for that movie a lot. Moving into a physical media roundup from this past week, we're both trying to slow up buying a lot of stuff, as we are, like, we only... Corey's the only person that buys me movies into my adulthood, and I am guessing I'm one of the only people that buys you movies into your adulthood. So we try to stop buying so much around this time because it's really hard to remember what each person has. But I did buy some movies that I did immediately tell Corey of, just so he knew. But I bought, during the Criterion sale, In a Lonely Place, which is a Humphrey Bogart film from, I believe, the late 40s or maybe early 50s. I bought the Criterion Blu-ray. Really excited about that. They used a line of that or some... They called back to it in Nouvelle Vague. And I was like, I should see that. I really like Humphrey Bogart. I also pre-ordered the Tron Ares 4K Steelbook just because it looks sexy as hell. And I think that movie's kind of underrated from this year. I really enjoyed it. So I'm excited to get that into my collection and listen to the fucking Nine Inch Nails score up for the upteenth time. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. As alive as you need to be.
Oh, it's so good. As I could run so fast. Yeah. I run so fast listening to that
good
song.
It's great. I do want to kind of get the other like 4K Steelbooks of the Tron movies, like the first two. Those are pretty sweet, too. I do have a couple movies I bought for you over Thanksgiving, so I'm excited to reveal those in a couple weeks when we do that. But coming out this week, a couple of new releases we have. Good Fortune, which you saw and liked. I'm excited to check that movie out eventually. And then The Strangers Chapter 2, which, I think we had like a new trailer or poster recently for the Chapter 3. Is coming out in February, I guess. I don't know. I'll see it because I've suffered through the other two for some reason. I don't know. Fucking Rennie Harlan. Okay.
I'm happy that his career somehow is still happening.
Hopefully this is the last Strangers movie. Just please. Don't make this like a 5-movie thing. But also some older titles coming out. Actually a lot of good ones. Minority Report, Dogma, which was a very... I don't know. For me, I feel like an infamous... physical media thing where like people couldn't find it on Blu-ray for a long time, and it was just only on DVD, but it was really tough to find. So in the past couple years they've had a lot more releases, but that's coming out on 4K. Catch Me If You Can, which I think is Steven Spielberg's most underrated movie and is in my top 5 favorite Spielberg movies for sure. I think that movie is so good, and I absolutely love it. And then in time for the new Anaconda movie, we have Anaconda, the original, coming out with Ice Cube on 4Q. I was trying to say Ice Cube and 4K, and I said both. Two glasses of wine in, we're getting there.
Yep.
I'm actually really excited for that new movie. So I haven't seen Anaconda.
Oh, that is like a Sci-Fi Channel
classic. I am stoked to watch the original one and then watch the new movie, and we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. And then also another new release is Dead of Winter, which had Emma Thompson in it, which I don't know. I didn't hear much about it.
I almost went to that. Interesting. I heard pretty good things. It's supposedly a pretty decent little thriller. Yeah. And I think some of it was actually shot in Minnesota.
I heard that.
So I'm like, okay. That's maybe cool. Show some love for something that's actually a little bit more local for us, because we don't get a whole lot of stuff shot in Minnesota, sadly. Moving into movie news. We did kind of talk about this briefly at the top of the episode.
Boo!
It's not great information. I'm already pissed about it, but I was already so pissed about it earlier this week that it's kind of somewhat subsided a little bit. Still angry, but we got word that Netflix is looking to acquire Warner Brothers for $82.7 billion. I've heard different numbers thrown out, that it was 83, that it was 72.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's from what I was able to find, which I think this was from Deadline, $82.7 billion. Pending regulatory approval, obviously, but Netflix CEO, fuckface, Ted Sarandos, who I hate with all my heart. If he ever goes missing, authorities, check my closet first, you'll find him there. But Ted Sarandos mentioned to keep Warner Brothers, they'll keep Warner Brothers, their films, theatrical. But as a slight caveat to that, the release window will likely get shortened. Fuck you for doing that, you're killing cinemas already. This will continue to harm cinemas, but... I feel like, I don't know, every single, like, whether it's SAG-AFTRA, like, every single organization within Hollywood is like, all right, well, we need to go meet with you guys, and we need to meet with, like, this can't be, if this is going to go through, it needs to be on our terms, too. We want to see the theater business and the cinemas kind of thrive and stay alive, and if you're going to adhere to your streaming platform, you're going to kill us all. Like, we're going to go the way of the dodo. So, fuck this. It's horrible information, horrible news. I'm hoping that somehow something in the 11th hour comes up and changes this all, because this feels like a nightmare that we can't wake up from, because Netflix, you're a great streaming service. Stop at that. Stop putting movies in theaters, or stop trying to make movies that can go to theaters. And if you are going to do that, keep them in theaters for longer than just 2 weeks. But yeah, I don't love this information. I'm hoping that something changes, or that we get more clarity, at least in the coming weeks, that makes this not seem like fucking apocalypse scenario for us.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It fucking sucks. It's like,
literally anyone else could have won this. I'd be like, all right, fine.
It's even like when Paramount was kind of in it, I'm like, that's also not like great, but it's another like studio where it's getting it. This is just like the more that all these things combine, like the less competition there is of studios, and that sucks, because then it's just all one monogamous thing of, oh, 20th Century Fox and Disney, that's all one thing now. Yeah. All right, Netflix and Warner Brothers, that's all one thing now. And you can watch Dune Part 3 2 weeks after it initially comes out on Netflix, and you can watch
Part 2
in front of... fuck that, man. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
And also, like, just kind of, again, the physical media thing of it, like...
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that initially, and then I saw someone post an article about that. I was like, don't make me sad now. Like, don't make me that.
Already, physical media is dying a bit, and, like, Warner Brothers especially is kind of like, here's a 4K... and here's a Blu-ray without a slipcover, which for us is very annoying.
Yeah, and then I have to shell out $50 for a steelbook that I have to pre-order.
It's not in stores.
3 months after the release of that said movie, and I'm like, what the fuck?
It sucks, and it really is just like, it's bummer news, and I know Christopher Nolan's been very outspoken about it too, and you kind of mentioned other groups, so... I don't know. Even if they kind of thwart it for now, I feel like it is inevitable.
Yeah.
It's bummer news.
I kind of hope that it's treated almost like when Disney acquired Hulu, and they're like, well, Hulu's still kind of its own thing, or even like with 20th Century Fox, where it's like, it still has its own like kind of branding, but I was really excited when they're like, no, Warner Bros. Will be theatrical, but it's like, fucking...
As soon as they said that,
I was like, fuck you,
like 2 weeks for like a movie like Sinners. Yeah. Where it had such great legs and built over time. It's like, you need that in the theatrical window.
I also just don't get it. Like, I don't get Netflix's complete aversion to making money. Like, movies in theaters. If you put these movies in theaters for any amount of time before they go to streaming, they're going to do better on streaming once they arrive there. Because you're going to get positive word of mouth. You're going to get people seeing these movies, and they'll go to streaming, and people will be like, oh, I heard about this being really good. I'll go watch this on Netflix. Yeah, do that. But also, like, to put it out for only 2 weeks, when, like, Wake Up Dead Man, that movie could clean up. Knives Out cleaned up when it was in theaters, when it was theatrical, which, granted, that was before it had Rian Johnson made the deal with Netflix. But we've gotten these little two-week little appetizer chunks of time for Glass Onion and Wake Up Dead Man to be in theaters, similar to, like, Frankenstein and shit like that, just to basically get awards accolades, when it's like, you know what? Netflix, if you're going to do this, I'm sorry. You're making TV movies? Go to the Emmys. Fuck you. You don't deserve an Oscar for me. So... yeah, this is going to be kind of a horrible thing that kind of unfolds over a long kind of period of time where we get more information. Hopefully there's some information that breeds to a silver lining of some sort. But yeah, it's kind of dour news to hear that Netflix is going to likely be acquiring Warner Brothers, because of all the possible suitors, it was the absolute last choice, last option, last solution I ever wanted to see. I was preferring Paramount over really anyone else. But then I also was like, what if Warner Brothers is like, actually, fuck you guys, we're just going to not sell.
After such a good year that Warner Brothers had with so many small movies like Weapons, Final Destination, Bloodlines, like even F1 part of their distribution shit, like, man, that sucks that it's just kind of caving in and being like, I know they're like in debt or whatever, but fucking who isn't in debt, I guess? Like, I always hear they're like, we're $2 billion in debt. I'm like,
what are you
this
doing?
Shit doesn't matter. What's this changing? Number $82 billion isn't real.
Yeah.
Nobody fucking has that shit, so it's fucking wild.
Yeah, so that's going to be something that I feel like we're going to be covering for a while in the coming months as it just gradually unfolds. But fuck you, Ted Sarandos. Moving into trailers from this past week, there are a number of like final trailers or second trailers that came out. But the biggest trailer I think that we saw this week was the sequel for Ready or Not. We got Ready or Not, Here I Come. Great title. It screams, now you see me, now you don't.
Which... I do want to say, I didn't talk about this in the Now You See Me, Now You Don't conversation. I'll mention it quickly here. is John M. Chu, who directed Now You See Me 2. He said he wanted to title that movie Now You See Me, Now You Don't. But the studio said, people don't want a movie that has don't in the title. Even though we've had movies like Don't Breathe, which are pretty good. We've had two of those, Don't Look Up or whatever, Oscar-nominated movie. So he's, like, in an interview for Wicked for Good, I think it was, he was like, no, like, I wanted to title that movie Now You See Me, Now You Don't, but they wouldn't let me do it for marketing reasons. And then, like, 10 years later, they're like, fuck it.
Yeah, we'll just do it.
Fuck it, we have a third one. Fuck it.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, anyways.
We got Ready or Not, Here I Come, which I love Ready or Not. It's made by, what is it, Radio Silence? Is that the pseudo name for the directorial duo that we have for these films? I love Ready or Not. It's one of my, like, favorite, like, if I need to recommend a fun, schlocky horror film to a potential horror fan or someone that's like, hey, give me a good, like, little thriller or horror movie. Ready or Not is usually one of the first ones I throw out there. I love that movie. It's so much fun. The trailer for the second one, it looks like a lot of the same, but we do have Catherine Newton joining the cast. We have a lot of people joining the cast. We got Sarah Michelle Gellar as well. The dude from Abigail that has like the big, wildly wide, stony face. I don't know. I can't even think of what this actor's name. I'm going to have to Google it. But I'm really excited for this movie, and I have confidence in the creative team behind the scenes. It's more just like, it feels like rinse and repeat. Like, Samara Weaving escapes that first movie just covered in blood in a wedding dress, and that iconography of her just smoking a cigarette as, like, the police lights are hitting the house. I'm like, that's badass. Just for her to end up in a similar situation, maybe, what, an hour later in within the world of Ready or Not. So it's like, okay, sure, why not? Yeah. I like the cast, but we're just going to do this again, run it back? All right.
Yeah, it looks fine. Like, I feel like it'll be pretty enjoyable. I think you and I saw that movie together, the first Ready or Not, and very, like, big surprise.
Yeah.
In, what, 2019 was that? Was that the last one?
I think 2019.
Yeah, I think that's also the movie that we saw the trailer for, Angel Has Fallen.
Really? Was that it?
I think that was the where...
You have a collect call coming from Mike. Was that fucking...
I think it was that movie. I could be wrong.
Well,
I don't
Angel,
know.
So Angel Has Fallen was 2019, so that would make sense.
It was like later that year, I think it was coming out. And we just, we were in a good mood already from the trailers of seeing that. And then the movie was really good. So, I don't know. I'm excited to see the cast of this new one.
Yeah. Kevin Durand was the wide, broad-faced man I was referring to. I love him, but like I never remember his fucking name. Also, we got Elijah Wood in this movie, so I'm really excited to see him.
Yeah.
Him just like popping up in horror movies is great, unless it's like the new Toxic Avenger. I'm like, stop. Also, David Cronenberg's in this fucking movie too, which is crazy. So, I'm more excited by the cast and the team than I am for the story premise, what this could be. I'm just hoping for another fun romp with these characters, though. In other news, we got announcement that Scarlett Johansson is in final talks to join Robert Pattinson in Batman Part 2. This is going to be the sequel to Matt Reeves' 2022 film. And the plot and character details still remain under wraps, but filming will be looking to begin in spring of 2026. The movie is slated to hit theaters in October of 2027, which is roughly 5 years after the original. I've complained a little bit about the distance between the movies, but that honestly hasn't even really bothered me anymore. I'm just more excited at this point to get the movie when we get it. And adding Scarlett Johansson to the cast? Oh, fuck yeah. Just do that. Yeah, 100%. I also heard rumblings that Zoe Kravitz might not be back as Catwoman, which I don't know if it's her not coming back as Catwoman or Catwoman's just not going to be a part of this movie. I'd be fine with either. I thought she was good in the movie, but I never loved her in the Batman. But Scarlett Johansson, you can cast her as literally fuck. Poison Ivy? All right. Like,
see,
literally
that's,
anything.
That's what I was thinking, is like, who was she cast as? Poison Ivy was
Vicky
one
Vale
of them.
Or something.
Vicky Vale is the other one I was going to say. That'd be kind of interesting, too. We haven't seen that since 89, you know? So that'd be interesting.
That was honestly, like, my go-to, like, gut thought was, like, Vicky Vale.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately. Maybe it's just because it's a blonde in a Batman movie.
Yeah.
So, but I would love to see, on whatever she's playing, I'm sold. Love it. What if she is Mr. Freeze's dead wife? I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Why not? She's joining all the friends. Jurassic World, joining that.
She's like,
DC.
Well. Run the gambit.
Fuck it. Let's do it. Okay, so there is a lot of award season stuff. We both love it. I love it especially.
You cover it way more in depth than I do.
I love
it. And you follow it more in depth than I do.
I remember in like... I think it was both the award seasons for 2017 and 18, I had a list on my iPad mini of every single awards show that happened, and I wrote down the winners. And even though I could look it up online, I still made a list in my notes app. And I still have it, and it's kind of special to me, I guess, because I love it. I love award season. It's so much fun. So I'm going to...
You still have the iPad mini?
I do have it. I transfer the notes to my phone now, so I can always have those. But there's a lot of stuff that happened this week in terms of both winners for like award shows and then nominations that came out. Probably focus more on the winners of some stuff more. But wanted to start off with the Gotham Awards, which is kind of the first big like awards thing. We talked about the nominations a few weeks back, I think. I'll highlight a few things in there. Again, I'm not going to touch on everything. But Best Feature went to One Battle After Another. That's going to be a constant theme of these next couple minutes. That movie is killing it right now in kind of these award season stuff, which is great. I love seeing that movie do well. The other thing that stuck out was It Was Just an Accident did really well at the Gotham Awards. Jafar Panahi won Best Director. He's going on. A lot of shit's going on with him right now. He got, I don't know if you saw it or not, mm-hmm. but he got basically sentenced in Iran for like propaganda material that he was putting out. So, and it was a thing where like he's sentenced, but if he returns to the country, he's going to get sentenced there. I think he said he's going back. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a whole other like narrative to this that I think is only going to boost people wanting to watch this movie. Kind of like the documentary last year that was the No Other Land?
No Other Land, yeah.
I think that's what it was, where it kind of like the political undertones of like the real world things kind of affected that. So it's just an interesting little sub story within that there. But It Was Just an Accident also won Best International Feature and Best Screenplay at the Gotham Awards. So very happy to see that movie doing well because it's really great there. Couple other things. We had the National Board of Reviews awards come out again. One Battle After Another, one Best Film there. PTA, one Best Director. That's great stuff. Rose Byrne got Best Actress for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. We have not seen that movie yet. I'm curious if it does get some Oscar buzz. I'd be very interested to check that one out.
I've been waiting to see if it gets Oscar buzz, so I know if I need to go see it. Because I'm like, that movie looks like it's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to wear on me. Like, not that it's not going to be good. I think it's probably a really good movie. I've heard great things about Rose Byrne in it, but I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Please.
It'd be a heavy hitter, it seems like. The other kind of big thing from the National Board of Reviews was Eva Victor winning Best Directorial Debut for Sorry Baby. That feels like a movie that's going to be we'll talk about it in the Indie Spirit Awards. That's kind of right in its wheelhouse, Oscar stuff, maybe a little bit tougher. So that was kind of the main thing from there. And then New York Film Critics Circle is kind of another big, like, early one battle after another. Best picture there. You know, common theme here. Jafar Panahi got Best Director there. Wagner Moura won Best Actor for The Secret Agent. Which I'm really excited to see that movie. It's kind of rolling out slowly right now. But another thing that is gaining a lot of steam, Amy Madigan won Best Supporting Actress for Weapons, which people are kind of locking her in for like a nomination at the Oscars 100%.
No.
It's going to happen.
You think so?
I think it is. Like, I didn't believe it either. And I think that movie, I think she's going to get nominated. I think it could get a screenplay nomination too.
I think I can get screenplay. I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't because Toni Collette. I would be, but I also wouldn't be surprised if she did because of Toni Collette. Like, I feel like Toni Collette was like the stepping stone of like, are you guys serious? You're not going to nominate this amazing performance that probably deserves to win this award.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they probably are going to have to reap what they sow and learn from their mistake. Or did they not learn? And like, oh, okay, well, we didn't nominate Toni Collette. We're not going to nominate. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Weapons come Oscar season will be in the conversation. I just don't know if it's going to be her.
It didn't, like, I didn't clock that as a thing. And then I've just, like, seen a lot of articles and, like, the awards and stuff. And, like, Amy Madigan has been in every time nominations. I'm like, fuck. Okay, didn't expect that. Moving into the AFI, they named their top 10 movies of the year. And theirs were Avatar, Fire and Ash, Begonia, Frankenstein, Hamnet, J. Kelly, Marty Supreme, one battle after another. Sinners, Train Dreams, and Wicked for Good. Kind of a lot of, like, most of those I think will be Best Picture things in there. Not a lot of, like, sentimental value not being in there, I guess, is kind of another, like, big one. I do want to quickly shout out the AFI Top 10 Shows of the Year. Adolescence, Andor, Death by Lightning, The Diplomat, The Lowdown, The Pit, Pluribus got in there, which I'm happy to see, Severance, The Studio, and Task. So, I've seen, like, four of these, I think. Adolescence is great. Andor, you and I both yeah. really like. Severance is good. Pluribus is pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm excited for that. Kind of the bigger award show, like the Critics' Choice Awards nominations came out this week. And again, I'm not going to run through all these, and we'll touch on these when the awards actually happen and like the winners get announced. But just wanted to shout out the Best Picture nominees from there too. Begonia, Frankenstein, Hamnet, Jay Kelly, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, Sentimental Value, Sinners, Train Dreams, and Wicked for Good. Again, more of the kind of same yeah. of what we've expected Difficult. There. The last thing I'll mention here, Indie Spirit Awards. I'll just talk about the Best Picture nominees there. Peter Hujar's Day? Hujar? I don't know. I don't know how the fuck to say it. The Plague, which I've seen a couple trailers for that. It looks interesting. Joel Edgerton is in it. And it, I don't know. I've heard like kind of some sneaky buzz that it could maybe get into Oscar talk. Sorry Baby, Train Dreams, and Twinless, which came out earlier this year as well. So a lot of award stuff. And a lot of things that we've actually seen. So I feel like we are kind of on top of a lot of stuff, which feels good, you know?
I mean, at this point this year, we were talking about it before we started recording. I'm at 92 movies, 92 new releases that I've seen this year. I think last year in total, I was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And we still have the rest of December to go. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, I am pretty well on top of it. And I just remember like, last year, and I'm probably going to try and do the same thing this year. As soon as all the Oscar noms come out, I'm going to see every Oscar nom. Mm. I'm going to try and do that again because okay. I actually really enjoyed doing that last year. It did create a lot of homework of trying to figure out where the fuck can I see all the short films right now.
Yeah.
But I am interested to try and kind of pursue that again this year just because it was a good experience. And who won our ballot?
You won last year for the Oscars, yeah.
Okay, so maybe that's what I need to do every year is just watch every fucking thing. Actually, but oh my god, and we already talked about this when we covered the Oscars, but I watched every single fucking short film. I got every one of those categories wrong, and I was so pissed because I spent like 6 hours, yeah. no, like 7 hours at the theater that day watching shorts, and I got all three of those categories wrong.
I remember so pissed. We saw the animated shorts together. And then we were like, yeah, we can rule out like a couple of these as and like the winners. Won. And then it won.
What was Shadow of the Cypress or something?
Something like that, yeah.
I was like, that one's like my third favorite. What? I'm like, that's not going to win. And then it won. Okay. I was like, god damn it, what?
Yeah. But award season's fun. I love tracking all this stuff. It's really fun to see. So, you know, we'll track the winners of a lot of those other things as they come along. Just the last few little movie news things. A new Men in Black movie is coming, I guess. You know, I like the movies enough. The first ones I haven't seen. International, which came out in 2019, I think, with Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson. This movie, the new one's going to be written by Chris Bremner, who wrote Bad Boys for Life, and it's obviously going to be a follow up to the Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones kind of franchise they started. I don't know if it's going to be a reboot or what they're doing, but. You know, the first one is great. I love the first one. Third one's not bad, actually.
I grew up thinking the second one was the first one, and I loved it. And then I was like, wait a minute. There's a two on this poster. Because I'm very smart. And then I was like, fuck, I should watch the first one. No, it didn't get me off at all. Then I watched the first one, I was like, oh, this one's really good. And then as I grew up, I was like, oh, the second one's fine. The third one I still haven't seen, and my wife loves that fucking movie. So I was like, maybe I'll watch that eventually. But also didn't watch International because I heard it was dog shit.
Yeah, I'll probably watch all of them before this new one comes out, as I tend to do.
Yeah.
And then a couple other little things. We had a first poster come out for Spider-Man Noir, which is a show of kind of a spin-off of the Spider-Verse movies. Nicolas Cage playing Ben Reilly. And we got a little taste of Nicolas Cage in a Spider-Man project and into the Spider-Verse, and I guess a brief cameo and Across the Spider-Verse at the end. I'm excited for this. I think it could be fun. Interesting that it's live action and not animated.
Yeah.
I feel like it could be more interesting if they could fully just do animated, do Spider-Verse style animation. I think that would kind of be cooler. As far as release date stuff, I mean, we talked about Warner Brothers and Netflix. I don't know when all that stuff is going to actually go into motion of, like, affecting Warner Brothers releases, but the release for Dune Part 3 may be moved up a week to avoid competition with Avengers Doomsday. So they're both slated to come out on December 18th, 2026. So, you know, Dune may be coming out a week earlier. Release dates are always changing, so it's kind of just fluctuation there. But, you know, I would love to have a little separation between the two just to let them breathe for a second. Just to be like, all right, this is a huge franchise movie. Another huge franchise movie. Give me a week to, like, sit with this and actually experience it.
If they were coming out the same day, which one are you seeing first?
Oh, fuck.
That's hard. I'm seeing Dune 3. But, like, I feel like the potential of having things ruined for you or spoiled by not seeing Doomsday first is way higher. Like,
that's the thing, yeah.
Dune 3, like, Dune Messiah, that book and what this is adapting, like, there's things that happen in that book, but, like, if I had, like, I've read the book, but if I hadn't and I learned things that happen in the story and then saw the movie, I don't think it would change much. Whereas it's like, I remember watching Infinity War. And I didn't go the Thursday night, I went Friday night, and we were still in high school, and Morgan Lesh, who I sat next to in fucking psychology, was like, they all die. They all get dusted. And I was like, what? He's like, Spider-Man's gone! He started listing them, and I'm like, shut the fuck up! Don't tell me this! I want to know this! So I'm like, I think I'm more excited for Dune Part 3, but I'm like, oh, maybe I would have to see Doomsday first.
I think Dune Part 3 will be better, but yeah. I think if I were to watch one first, Doomsday might take it just by a little bit. But it's going to be fun. Like, there's a lot of big things coming out next year. The last little bit of movie news that we have is just a fun one. We mentioned a little bit last week, Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, came out in theaters. You know, Quentin Tarantino, one of his movies that he says is one movie, I guess, because he can do 10, however he fucking determines that. But anyways, he pops up like every few months and just shits on somebody and then kind of just drops off.
He's kind of gotten like crotchety in his old age. It's like, what is going on?
He'll be on a podcast and he'll just say some weird shit. And this week he chose to really just trash Paul Dano.
Yeah, boy's just stimming over Dano.
He was talking about some of the best movies of the 21st century and There Will Be Blood came up. And he said that it kind of ranks a little bit lower on his list. Because Paul Dano is, quote, weak sauce in that movie.
Weak sauce.
In both of the roles that Paul Dano has in the movie. And he, you know, he just said that Paul Dano is not a strong actor, essentially. You know, there was... a lot of people came to Paul Dano's defense. Alec Baldwin released a video.
I've shared that on our Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Paul Dano is great. He's a really good actor. You know, Prisoners and The Batman and There Will Be Blood, he's really good in the dual roles there. Well, Fablemans.
And you can't, like, his performance is exactly what it needed to be in There Will Be Blood. Like, yeah. I don't understand the critique that Tarantino has. Right. I'm like, were you just, like, pissed off when you watched this? Like, what's going on? Like,
here?
He's playing that role the exact way he needs to because, like, no one's going to outshine Daniel Day-Lewis when he is in his most, like, grizzled... oil tycoon, rage-filled, piss and vinegar, fucking madman vibe. Like, no one's gonna outshine him in that. So I'm like, I don't know what you were expecting.
I don't
get
it.
Also, like, Tarantino likes the Lone Ranger from, like... like, he's got weird takes. He loves Joker Folio 2, which I haven't seen. I know you like it. But, like, he's got takes that are hot takes. So I think it's in poor taste for him to just, like, randomly go for Paul Dano out of fucking nowhere. He also called out, like, Owen Wilson and Matthew Lillard.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what are you doing? I joked to you earlier. I was like, maybe he's, like, just setting himself up for a really funny cast announcement for his 10th film starring Owen Wilson, Matthew Lillard, and Paul Dano or some stupid shit. But I'm like, I don't know. Just maybe stick to salivating over feet and definitely being autistic in your interviews. And just maybe don't badmouth someone who did nothing to you. It's just so bizarre.
It's a wild thing.
Weak sauce. Oh, just...
It's so funny, but it's just so out of left field.
It's like, why? What's the point? I also just... it's just off base on that.
Just but. A strange human.
Yeah. Make your 10th movie. Can't wait to see it. But maybe until then, just shut the fuck up a little bit.
Just chill.
Yeah, you're going to get canceled here just for saying something unsafe. But anyway, thank you for joining us for another episode of Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok for more in-depth movie reviews and movie news. And don't forget to subscribe to us on podcasts, Spotify, whatever. Oh, it was Spotify Wrapped.
Fuck
this past week. We didn't even talk about Spotify.
We didn't need to until you brought it up.
I know. I just thought about it because I know you and I both fucking dread the day.
It
of Spotify
sucks.
Wrapped, which if you're listening to us on Spotify, thank you. You're probably the only person doing so. But also, you don't need to post your Spotify Wrapped on your story. People don't give a shit what you listen to.
No.
It's cool for you. Only for you. I looked at mine and I was like, that's interesting. Didn't share it. Not that I'm right in everything I do, but please follow suit. I don't give a shit what you listen to. If you listen to us, we're really thankful for that and would like for you to kind of spread the word. But yeah, Spotify Wrapped. It is just a play.
My biggest thing, it's like, so I have Apple Music and they have like their replay thing. So it's essentially the same deal if like your most listened to songs, whatever. I don't have an issue with like looking at it and being like, oh, that's interesting. Like I listen to that one the most. The thing that I get annoyed by is people that are so shocked when they're like, wow, the people that the musicians I like listening to the most are the musicians I listened to the most this year.
And then, who would have guessed?
And then every white girl on Instagram posts their Spotify rap and says, so accurate. Yeah, it's fucking data.
It's
numbers. Yeah, of course it's fucking accurate. It's showing you what you listen to the most.
It's just
what do you? It's just showing you numbers. Yeah, it's accurate.
Truth.
Yeah, I know you listen to Sabrina Carpenter the most because you fucking like her and you listen to her the most. Don't post it on your fucking story. I don't care.
What was the? Did you have a song that was your like most listened to this past year?
I forgot my most one. It was honestly just, it was kind of a weird mix of like I listened to a lot of shit, so like a lot of country music. Morgan Wallen and Luke Combs were up there. Kendrick was up there.
Yeah.
Greta Van Fleet was up there. So it's like a weird mix of shit.
My
but
most listened to was TV Off by Kendrick.
Oh, nice.
I fucking love that song.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But anyways, long-winded little epilogue to this episode.
Fuck Spotify Wrapped.
It's the dumbest thing.
Hate it.
I always hate that it also comes at like the beginning of December. I'm like, we still have another month left.
Yeah, what happened?
What's going on? Anyway, it's not just about what's on screen. It's also about who's next to you in the theater.
For Mason and I, it's late night. That's a wrap.